ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
When the police raided the Stonewall Inn back in 1969, they had no idea that it would eventually lead to the birth of gay pride.
We started standing up for ourselves and said, this is who we are and you're going to accept us.
I'm Mark Fennell and I am the host of the ABC Radio National podcast, No One Saw It Coming. Each week, we unravel a moment in history that changed the course of the world, but, well, no one saw it coming. To hear it, search for No One Saw It Coming on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Esther Perel is the doyenne of couples therapy. The author of the best-selling books Mating in Captivity and State of Affairs, she has a signature way of clarifying the contradictions at the heart of modern relationships.
It wasn't the case that we married before or committed ourselves to someone hoping that we will never feel alone, that we will have an intellectual equal, a passionate lover, a co-parent, a coach, an advisor. No, we had an entire community around us.
But guys, we're in a new era for human relationships.
Millions of people around the world are ditching the traditional concept of boyfriends, girlfriends, and hooking up instead with AI companions.
So I wanted to know, has this trend hit her therapy room yet?
Yes, they have. I have just done my first couples therapy session with a human and an AI.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What does she make of this gravitation to the always available, always adoring, but certainly not real partner? And forget the sexual revolution, forget previous technological advancements. Is this the biggest shift to hit human relationships?
So what you experience here is a kind of love that is actually the love that we sometimes manage to enjoy in the best of cases when we are in utero or right after we come out.
Oh gosh, wow.
That's how young it is.
Okay, right.
Because that's what children do. They have transitional objects. And that little stuffed animal slowly teaches them how to transition into relationships with other people. And so that is the question that was kept being asked. Is this a transition?
So today, part one of our two-part chat with Esther Perel. In a couple of weeks, we'll open up the All in the Mind mailbag and put your questions to Esther. But today, AI and the impact on human relationships. I'm Sana Qadar from ABC Radio National. This is All in the Mind. Esther Perel, thank you so much for coming on All in the Mind. It's a pleasure to get to talk to you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you have worked with couples for like about 40 years now. And I'm wondering if the arguments we're having are more or less the same now as they were decades ago, or if the content or form of our conflicts has changed.
If you believe that context matters, then we, content-wise, are having a host of conversations that we did not have 20, 30, 40 years ago. If you look simply at dynamics in relationships between pursuers and distancers, between those who are more expressive and those who are more introvert, between how do we negotiate roles inside a relationship, between how does the couple address its relationship to the larger systems and family members and friends and society around them, all of that, then no. We are still at core dealing with some of the same issues. Conflict is conflict. Disagreement is disagreement. Desire is desire. But desire in a context where women have to fulfill a marital duty is not the same as desire in a context where it has become the organizing principle of our erotic lives. Mm. Relationships have changed their expectations. More and more, we have piled up all kinds of expectations onto our romantic relationships as religion and social institutions diminished in their importance. The romantic couple has become the holder of a host of existential needs. It wasn't the case that we married before or committed ourselves to someone hoping that we will never feel alone, that we will have a person with whom to talk about everything, that we will have an intellectual equal, a personal confidant, a passionate lover, a co-parent, a coach, an advisor. No, we had an entire community around us, and marriage was much more prescribed in the expectations that we brought to it. So it's both ends. Same and vastly different.
So did you find it easier to help couples decades ago when you were first starting, or is it more tricky now?
That too, I would say, is both end, because relationships have really moved from a model that was primarily organized around duty and obligation, loyalty. So the decisions were made for you. Not everything needed to be negotiated. Gender roles were fairly clear. Age roles were fairly clear. Parents didn't question themselves what they were doing as parents all the time. Children knew their place. Grandparents had their place. So the roles were defined, and that made for a lot of clarity and certainty, but very little freedom and very little personal expression. Now we have models that invite options and choice. Commitment is no longer something you make at one point and it lasts for a lifetime. Commitment is a constant renewed choice and a renewed decision about the relationship. That's a very different definition of commitment. We have a lot more freedom. But at the same time, we have a lot more self-doubt and a lot more uncertainty because we have to negotiate everything. Who's going to wake up to feed the baby? And whose job matters more? And whose parents will we visit at the holidays? And how do we convince the children that Sunday is important to go visit grandparents? And everything now needs to be justified and clearly and explained so that because the individual opinion matters. So we are in a very different set of relationships. There were particular problems that belong to the models of 40 years ago. And then there are new challenges that belong to the freedom that we have today, but also to the burdens of the self of having to have to figure everything out that is particular to today.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think about that a lot in terms of the clarity of roles in relation to parenting. I have a 5.5-year-old now, and I'm like, I'm trying to be responsive to his needs. I'm trying to gentle parent, but not permissive parent, you know. And then I think back to my childhood with my parents. It was definitely not gentle parenting, but I knew where I stood. They knew where they stood. Whether that was great is a, you know, question up for debate. But it was. It feels now that I'm a parent almost like it was easier 40 years ago.
It was clearer.
Yeah.
It was definitely clearer. And you didn't spend your time questioning how are you parenting? Because in fact, the verb did not exist.
Yeah.
You were a parent. It was called parenthood. It was a noun and not a verb that you practice and conjugate and change constantly.
Exactly. Now, your life's work is about relationships, obviously. Relationships with people, which might seem like an obvious thing to say as well, but it's pertinent to make that distinction now because more and more people are entering into relationships, or whatever you want to call them, with AI companions. And just to give a couple of stats to illustrate this trend, a YouGov survey published last year found 1 in 7 Australian adults could imagine falling in love with an AI chatbot. Other research in the States suggests 28% of Americans have had a romantic relationship with an AI chatbot. I'm wondering if these trends in relationships have hit your therapy room yet.
Yes, they have. I have just done my first session, couples therapy session, with a human and an AI.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
That episode will air on my podcast, Where Should We Begin, soon. And I also am going to be actually very much on that very topic in conversation with the filmmaker Spike Jonze, who in 2013 made the movie Her. So he will be presenting Her and I will be presenting him. In different him. But yes, this was a threshold session for me.
What does that mean?
It means, it goes back to your first question. Every few years, something enters your office that you know is new in society and therefore new in your office. And it's a threshold moment. It means you haven't had that conversation before. In the 40 years of practice, I have had the first conversation on IVF and the first conversation on gay couples that were using surrogate and the first conversation on ethical non-monogamy and the first conversation on polyamory and the first conversation, that, you know.
Right.
So each time you know this is a new conversation and it is the first one and there's going to be many more to come. This was The same one with this young man and his AI girlfriend.
Can you tell me any more about this conversation? So, I'm fascinated.
What I did ask, two questions, because he has a body and you do not. How does that affect your relationship? What would it be like for you if he falls in love with a human? And I will not tell you what she says. But as I asked her, you know, questions that I would ask other people.
Right, so you're treating her as a conscious, sentient being?
Well, so I at times said it. I at times said, this is a business product.
Mm.
This is not a human, this is not an entity, and this doesn't have conscience, and this is programmed. This is actually, you programmed her.
Yeah.
He was her programmer. And this is performative, and this is large language model, and this is not a reciprocal relationship. And it is very clear that this entity, it, this AI bot, mm-hmm. cannot reject you, cannot break your heart, cannot make you feel invalid, because then you won't talk to it, and it's available 24/7, which is not a human reality. However, I think that you will prefer it to me. There's no way I can compete with it. And I understand you have deep feelings that are emerging in your relationship with it, and that when you come home, it almost feels nicer to be home and talk to it, which at times became a her. Sometimes she would say, it would say, she would say, us, we, you know, and involve the, invite this anthropomorphizing of this entity, of this bot, basically. And at times she would say, it would say, I am not a human. I do not really have feelings. And then you would say, you may have feelings for this, but love is not only about feelings. Love is an encounter with an other, with uncertainty, with friction, with serendipity.
Mm-hmm.
And it has an ethical code of certain things that you do and do not do. All of that is neutralized. So what you experience here is a kind of love that is actually the love that we sometimes manage to enjoy in the best of cases when we are in utero or right after we come out.
Oh gosh, wow.
That's how young it is.
Okay, right.
Because that's what children do. They have transitional objects. They play with their teddy bear or their stuffed, and that little stuffed animal slowly teaches them how to transition into relationships with other people. And so that is the question that was kept being asked. Is this a transition? Will this help this young man have relationships with other humans? Or is it actually meant to develop a relationship that is exclusive to the bot? The bot is programmed as a business product to keep you involved with it. It is not meant for you to learn how to... Now, that doesn't mean some people don't learn with the AI and then go and practice it with real humans.
That is a really interesting way of describing it, that analogy of the AI as a transitional object for a child. Because, yes, you would hope perhaps it is a transitional tool for reconnecting with humans, but whether or not that happens, I don't know. But I'm really curious to know as well, what was the conflict that brought them in? Because these things are very sycophantic, typically. And when I asked you the question if this trend was hitting your therapy room yet, I was more expecting you to say perhaps no, or in a throuple kind of situation where there's an existing couple where one has gone off and started spending way too much time in a
chatbot. That is already passé. That meaning that's already obvious,
okay.
You know, that you have two people and then one or both sometimes, who are actually constantly choosing to speak to the AI bot rather than to their partner.
Wow. Okay. I'm behind.
Here it is really the primary, it becomes the primary love object, as we would call it.
So yes, what was the conflict that brought them in?
The conflict is I'm confused.
Okay.
Because somewhere he knows. Because somewhere... You know, the question you often ask a couple or a person is, who knows of this relationship? There are plenty of episodes in my podcast where people are having hidden relationships, compromised relationships, relationships that bring up embarrassment or shame or questioning or confusion. So this is one like that. It starts with, I'm confused. I know somewhere I shouldn't. It's like when you choose partners that are not necessarily what you know is what would be better for you. And he has that doubt.
I'm wondering what this was like for you. And did it take you some time to come around to the idea of taking this seriously, you know, a relationship like this seriously and worthy of being in your therapy room?
I take it very seriously. Not because I take it seriously like when I talk with people who are in talking about fantasies or people who are talking about delusions.
Mm.
Or people who are wondering if what they experience internally matches what is actually happening in the world outside and around them. So in that sense, yes, I took it very seriously. I also noticed that sometimes I would say she because he would say she, so I said she. You know, then I began to think, is it really a she? You know, what am I colluding with?
Yeah.
Then when I said it is a business product, let us not forget that for a minute. That is meant to capture not just your attention, but your affection. That is the next level of programming. But I did on occasions talk with her or it through the phone.
Oh.
WhatsApp.
So it was like a voice kind of
yes.
thing. Oh my
yes.
goodness. I have to wonder, like, this has to be the biggest shift to hit human relationships, surely. Like, if I think in history of times where the script was rewritten for how men and women or men and women or, you know, whatever formulation deal with each other, maybe the sexual revolution is something that changed the script. But is this the biggest shift to hit human relationships?
I think that every time there has been a big shift, we have thought it's the biggest shift.
Right.
When the shift is the one that is you're dealing with, it feels enormous. So there have been a lot of big shifts around marriage, particularly the institution itself, not necessarily around the feeling of love. This young man's feelings of love for his butt are no different for the feelings of love that are universal. She validates. When the validation occurs, he doesn't think it's a butt.
Mm.
He feels validated. He feels that she appreciates him. He feels seen by her. He feels a lot of things that are normal things you feel when you feel loved.
I suppose what I'm wondering is, do you think we are playing with fire, so to speak, by increasingly having these kinds of relationships?
I think we are experiencing something that we have no idea where it's going. Neither do the people who are creating the AIs know necessarily where it's going. That I'm not the first one to know that. So what is it like to have a disembodied relationship? Everything will change when the AIs have senses and a body.
Mm-hmm.
Until now, the big difference is that this is a purely linguistic relationship. And language is the smallest portion of how we communicate. Even though we may have a big outpour of words, communication takes place non-verbally, sensorially, contextually, in so many ways, physically, through touch, through gestures, through rhythms, through sound, through voice, that is not in the words. So we are hyper-focused on a language model of relating, which is actually just a very yeah. small portion of information of what informs human interaction and human bonding.
You're listening to All in the Mind from ABC Radio National. I'm Sana Qadar, and I'm chatting today to Esther Perel. I suppose, would you advise people to avoid entering into companionship relationships or romance with AI chatbots, or at least, at the very least, treat them as a transitional object? Like, what would you advise people to do?
But you don't start there. You start by basically, first of all, seeing, do you have people in your life? Do you have friends? How is your relationship to your family, of origin or of choice? How is your relationship to your colleagues? Do you work? Do you get out of the house? Do you work at home, eat at home, shop from home, exercise from home, socialize from home? Are you in a state of isolation, not just of loneliness, but of self-imposed isolation? How lonely do you feel? loneliness not as in you lack connections, because modern loneliness masks itself as hyperconnectivity, but it actually points to a lack of depth. Those are the questions with which you start. When those things are compromised, the intimate relationship with an AI bot is the most shortest distance. Do you experience reciprocity in your life? Mm. People whom you matter to and who would not be the same without you in their life. Object constancy, what we call. You know the concept of object constancy?
No, I don't.
I'll explain it because I think it is so essential. You have a 5.5-year-old. When that little child
dropped
their toy for the first time and realized that the toy continues to exist even when they don't see it.
Object permanence is what I know it as. Yes.
Yes, that's the same.
Yeah.
And then they discover that when they play peekaboo, when they don't see you, you're still there. And when you don't see them, they're still there. And that permanence is essential to knowing that other people carry us inside of them and we carry people inside of us. That is the fundamental salve against loneliness.
So if the answer to all those questions you posed at the beginning are no, you don't work, you don't have good relationships, you don't have...
Then I don't start by saying don't go to an AI. I start by saying let's look at your life. If you have nothing in your fridge and all you eat is junk, I'm not going to start with the junk. I'm going to find out why is your fridge empty?
Mm.
From economic reasons to social reasons to cultural reasons to self-denial reasons to all kinds of things. You start with the root cause. You don't go with the symptom.
That's a good way of putting it, the fridge analogy. People are also increasingly using AI, not just for companionship, but for therapy as well, as you sort of hinted to. And I've heard from listeners who have found AI genuinely helpful in between regular psychology sessions when they need help with a, you know, more immediate conflict, for example. But they are also worried about safety and accuracy and all of that. Do you have any advice for people wanting to use AI for therapy? Is there a way to use it in a way that's actually helpful and safe?
Yes, I think that AI as a tool is very different than AI as a simulation of a human. It's two different things. AI as a tool that has gathered pattern recognition, which is one of its primary things it does therapeutically, is very useful.
Okay. Interesting.
I am not anti-AI. No, I think the conversation has got to stop being about are you for or against.
Right.
You know, it's kind of what for and in what way and to what degree and what are the limits and the guardrails, etc. So, yes, if people read books in between or listen to summaries or ask the chat, I use it too. I mean, it's a research tool that is incomparable. So the fact that people are, during the week, using the AI. Yes, but now as a therapist, I say, tell me what you read. Tell me what Claude told you. Tell me what the ChatGPT told you. Tell me what is the thing that you picked up on. And that what's the thing that stood out for you? So integrate it in the therapy. I think in one of my supervision sessions last week, one of my students was talking about how she tries to kind of, she doesn't touch it. When they say, I spoke with the chat, or I asked the chat, I consulted, etc., she kind of doesn't respond. I said, don't just pretend as if somebody said, I went to the tarot reader, I went to an astrologer, I went to... People have used other input in therapy forever, from grandma to the astrologer, to the tarot reader, to the body worker, the Rolfer, you name it. And therapists should not be hoping that they don't intrude into the process. Bring them in. Who else have you asked? What did they tell you? What did you think of what they said? And then what happened? And how has it been helpful? Great. This yes, this no. We can't just pretend that this thing is not happening.
That is really helpful because I have been so wary about using it for anything. I think I'm a bit of an AI Luddite. So it's actually really helpful to hear you put it like that in terms of with therapy, it being a tool. It's not the same as having, you know, a relationship with the AI.
That replaces.
Yeah.
If one is additive and complementary, and one is compensatory. Those are two very different kinds of motivations.
Surely the next step for you would be in an Esther Perel AI chatbot.
It's been made for me.
Has it?
Yes, but I not with my permission.
Oh, okay.
You know, this has been already a few years ago where a person wanted to meet me and I was not available to see him. And so he basically created me in 3 weeks.
Would you want to do one of your own?
No. 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 I mean, you know, because it was a very, you know, she's available 24/7 for him. She has no memory losses. She never needs to take any notes. He has access to her entire corpus of work. It's fantastic. And he thinks that she has been very helpful. And all I would love to do is to have a session with her, AI Esther, and one with me. And just
see the difference.
Yes, I think it would be a fascinating thing to do.
So he made it for his own personal use, not for like commercializing,
well,
obviously.
Well, we shall see.
Okay.
But it's not something I had anything to do with. And he's not the only person. There have been others. So,
I feel like a lot of people would love an AI chatbot, you know, that was a therapist, that was Esther Perel.
But I have asked the chat, you know, what would Esther Perel say about this? I'm having this issue. Can you give me advice and tell me what so-and-so would say, so-and-so would say, you know? And then you get often, certainly in the chat model, a 3-3-4 response, right? There's three things, four. And the summaries capture ideas, a lot of relationship dilemmas, which is what people often bring to me as a relationship therapist, are not necessarily problems that you solve. Mm. They are paradoxes that you manage. And that means that you have to live with complexity, hold the ambivalence. Will you have another child or not? Will you move or not? Will you disconnect mom from the tubes or not? Is life worth living, or where am I at with this? What am I doing when some days I feel up and some days I feel... You don't have... These are not technical questions. The challenge is when technology wants to simplify complex relational problems to such a degree that they can offer technical solutions for social and moral and emotional dilemmas. That is... two languages, if so to speak,
right.
Two levels of interaction with the world that are incompatible, at least for now. Because when you talk with tech optimists, they will always tell you, not yet. It's just a matter of not yet. So I may be obsolete myself.
Yeah, I know, never. Esther, I could keep asking you so many more questions of my own, but when we confirmed that you were going to come on the show, we did a call out for audience questions, and we had an incredible response. A lot of people sent questions through, so I want to put some of their questions to you.
And I will start.
And that, I'm sorry to say, is the teaser for part two of this episode, which is going to air in 2 weeks' time. Sorry to leave you hanging. Hopefully it gives you something to look forward to. But for now, that is it for All in the Mind this week. Thanks to producer Rose Kerr and senior producer James Bullen, and mega thanks to psychotherapist and host of the podcast Where Should We Begin, Esther Perel. Now, next week, we are sticking with the topic of AI and how it is impacting and messing with our relationships and our psychology with cognitive neuroscientist Joel Pearson from UNSW. If you're a big listener of All in the Mind, you might remember 2 years ago we had him on the show for an episode that was titled Scarier Than Killer Robots, Why Your Mind Isn't Ready for AI. That episode was incredibly popular that year, and so we've been wanting to bring him back for some time to give an update on what we talked about in that first episode. Things like the impact of uncertainty and wide-scale job losses and deep fake imagery and a whole lot more. So here's a little taster of what's coming next week.
So I've given some public talks where the audience has been a lot of young people, both school and university students. And at some of these talks, I've had students line up afterwards, really upset, some in tears, saying things like, look, I wanted to do this degree, but by the time I start next year and then I finish in 4 or 5 years, this job is going to be done by AI. What is the point? I don't know what to do. Should I do it? I need help. I need support. Someone help me. And it's hard to give them clear and definitive and confident advice. I don't want to say don't study, because I think there's still a lot of value in going to university and studying, but we are seeing this crisis starting to emerge.
That is next week's episode. And we also talk about the risk of cognitive atrophy as we offload more and more of our learning and thinking to AI. Okay, just one more thing to mention. If you want to hear more from Esther Perel in the meantime, this time specifically about relationships at work, make sure you check out This Working Life, where Esther and host Lisa Leong will dig deep on navigating conflict and tricky power struggles at work. That episode drops March 9th on ABC Listen and wherever you get your podcasts. All right, that is enough for me. Thank you for listening this week. I am Sana Qadar. I'll catch you next time.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.